Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this modern dystopia. It's episode number 151 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag dives further into Big 12 football tiebreakers. At 12:30, we clean up the NFL weekend. And in mere minutes, we're talking Texas, Iowa State. I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today is a guy who always makes sure the horn section sounds good and the inventor of Am I the A-Hole, which he never is because he's the chillest dude in the room. It's Shoeless Sam Pika. What's up, Sam? How are you today?
I'm good. I almost pulled a Trey Elling on the way in here, but the light is on and I am here. All is well.
Sounds like you were pretty cool coming into the studio today. And sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
Ah, you damn right. What does that mean, almost pulled a Trey Elling? What does that mean?
Almost ran out of gas.
Oh, almost ran out of gas. Is that you? Are you a you run out of gas guy?
First day ever producing for Bucky and Aaron. Back at the other station, I ran out of gas on Mopac.
That's
coming from
right.
My apartment on Parmer.
But you don't still do it.
Had to run. No, I don't still do it. But okay. One time is enough to establish a reputation.
I guess so.
Had to run to the gas station, which was probably about a half mile away. Ran back with a can full of gas, not realizing that I was sloshing gasoline all over my shoes and my socks. Get enough gas into the car to get it to the station, get it filled up, make it to work on time. Start the show, and then I realize, because back then, the place on North Lamar that you were also a part of this radio station at that time, the producer's area was in the same room as the hosts.
Yeah.
So the production board was in there with the microphones and everything else going on. So as soon as we start the show, I'm one out of breath, and two, I realize that the room just reeks of gasoline as a result. And I'd like to think it was a pretty good Bucky and Aaron show. Because of that.
That'll do it. I've had some high levels of productivity with just a little bit of gasoline fumes in the air.
There you go.
Just a little bit of that. Working outside and stuff, that can work. Never done it inside, though. All right, so before we jump in with some Texas football and the current game, a couple of things to get out of the way. Number one, a Longhorn fan texted us yesterday and asked a perfectly legitimate question that now has a logical answer. The question was, hey, guys, why am I not seeing LHN doing that first basketball game? What's the deal? I looked at the schedule later and realized, well, wait a second. There's some games later in the year that have not been listed as LHN. Maybe they just hadn't scheduled it. That was the case. This morning, media deal goes out, and if you look at the schedule now, you'll see plenty of LHN. They're going to around 20 games for the season, so including tomorrow's game with UTRGV, LHN will have you covered once again. I'm assuming it is Lowell Galindo and Lance Blanks once again.
Yay.
They will have you covered for Longhorn basketball. Obviously, we've got you covered on the radio side here on the Horn. So that's happening.
Why did it take them so long to get that figured out?
Maybe because it's 2020 and it's crazy and they're waiting until the very end. I have no idea.
Nobody thinks UTRGV is going to end up on even ESPN Plus. Just go ahead and call a spade, LHN, and let us know that you are doing the first game of the year.
To be fair, today is November 24th, so they're probably re-racking the last Texas A&M football game to play at least 10 times today. There's a lot going on, so maybe that was it. And that is our second bit of news. It is the 24th of November. I knew Chris Bennett was going to wake up and shoot out information hunk after information hunk on the last game that the Longhorns and the Aggies played. He hit, I think, six different ways to do it when I first looked. He had the Dave South call. He had the regular video of Tucker hitting the kick. He had Case McCoy's run, big scramble. I still think Espinosa held, but who cares now? He had, what else was it? There was like at least two or three other ways of letting us know.
Hold on just
what
a second.
Happened.
This is incredible, the player introductions for this Texas A&M game. I think they literally have a fan to these guys left forcing their hair to blow in the wind.
Really?
And half these guys have mullets because I think this is like the mid-1980s. This may be Jeff Ward era Texas Longhorn football here. Every single one of these Texas players, when they show their picture, it's a live shot of these guys with a fan blowing their hair to one side. I love that. They need to bring this back.
Some great old graphics here on this game.
Ray Childress
on the Aggie defense in this game.
That would have been mid to late 80s?
This is probably, I'm guessing this is 83.
Texas, 83, so early to mid 80s.
I'm guessing this is 83. Because, yeah, but the 85 game would have been at night. This is daytime, so this is 81 or 83 is my guess.
Okay.
One of those two. So it is the anniversary of the last game, and I'm sure there's a lot of thoughts you may have if you're a Longhorn fan or if you're an Aggie fan too. So you know I'm going to take this opportunity to discuss my favorite college football game of all time. I want it to be back. Mm-hmm. I want it to be played. Some people disagree with me. A lot of people agree with me. And yes, I've thrown out another poll. They did a dangerous thing yesterday, Trey. They let me know that we have a poll function on our blog pages, blog posts at hornfm.com. Didn't even realize that, but I do now. So here is the poll. It is simply, should the game happen again? And I'm giving you multiple choices. I'm giving you yes, two games home and home. Yes, two games neutral site. Yes, every year home and home. Yes, every year neutral site. The snobby answer, only in a New Year's Six Bowl or better. Or no, the Aggies left the Big 12. It's over 27-25 forever. I did that one just for you, Longhorn fans.
Very petty of you. Well done.
Because I know a lot of you, there are Longhorn fans out there that really value the 27-25.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand that on some level. Because I'm guessing if the Aggies had won that game, my people would remember the score. I'm going to guess, just assuming. So as of right now, Trey, a couple things of interest. 71% of the votes are in, and they want every year home and home. The other interesting note is that I don't see one vote for a neutral site. So no matter what anybody thinks, if you're yes, you do not want that game to go neutral site.
Well, the neutral site bet is only meeting at a New Year's Six Bowl or better.
True, but I'm saying I put it in as a scheduled neutral site, so nobody wants that.
No, if you're voting for that game to come back, you want it to be home and home because you've tasted that. Just like with Texas OU, you don't want that to be home and home because you've already tasted what it's like at the state fair every year.
I agree. I've heard the talk of, well, what if the Longhorns and Aggies played at Jerry World? Ugh, it just sounds gross as I say it. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. So you can give us your thoughts there, hornfm.com. You can check out our page, the Shirts and Skins page. If you didn't, if you haven't listened to the interview that Trey did with Lou Diamond Phillips or the interview Trey did with Matthew McConaughey, we've got those on the page, and we'll be throwing all kinds of stuff up for you. Hornfm.com, lots of good stuff there.
I do have a very fond memory of watching that final Texas A&M game at my granddad's place in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of fond memories from watching Texas football over the years with family, and this is a top two or three moment for us, and it was me, my K-dad, and then my mom all sitting in the living room watching that game and celebrating together after the game had ended, after Justin Tucker obviously hits the kick, and much like you've talked about before, Chad, we felt good about the prospects of hitting that kick.
Did
Tucker
you?
Was nails.
Did you have confidence in that one?
It wasn't a tough kick to begin with. Even if it had been a 50 or 55 yard kick, I probably would have felt pretty good with it.
You weren't sweating. What was he, number 19? Is that right?
Yeah,
you weren't sweating the 1-9 at 40 yards.
But it still felt good to see it go through the uprights.
Yeah, sure it did. Yeah, no, you still had to complete the moment. But what I always remember about that moment is the lie that I was telling to someone important in my life at that moment, because I was at the game. And my niece was 11, and she and I are watching the game, and we're...
Niece is in the crowd with you.
Yes, we are in the seats together. My parents are up in a different spot, so we're the only ones there, you know, in our group. And as they're getting ready to come, I watch the Case McCoy run, and I realize what's happening here, and I know how good Tucker is. And I know he's nailing this thing, but I told her every lie I could think of. I was like, I mean, got it coming off the edge. I'm naming Aggies. Oh, this guy could be coming off the edge, could block it, bad snap. You never know. The pressure of this kick. I mean, I'm trying to come up with every reason why he's missing. I knew he was going to nail it. I knew he was going to split those uprights like he always does and still does to this day. And when he kicked it, there's a couple kicks in my life that I could tell you about live that sounded like a cannon. That was one of them. Mm. It sounded like a cannon shot. It sounded like a shotgun went off when Tucker hit that kick. I don't know if he would say it's the most true kick he ever struck, but man, as soon as he made contact, I thought, yeah, the only way that misses is if it gets blocked. And there was no block. And as soon as the ball was in the air, I realized that I just, for verification's sake, I looked down at the official and realized, yep, there it is. And then I watched a whole bunch of people wearing burnt orange get an early Christmas present.
Man, that may not have been the truest kick that he's ever hit, but that was still a pretty damn true kick.
That's what I'm saying. It was it's right. I don't know if he would say that because it would, but because of the importance of it and the fact that it's that game, he's got to rank it high up there, man. He nailed that thing.
It looks like it's pushed a little bit right from his perspective. It's pushed a little bit right, but I feel like when it went through the uprights, it was dead center. It's just because ball was set to the left hash. It looks like it wasn't straight down the middle, but I feel like it was.
As an Aggie fan, I'll let people play the what if game on that one a lot, but I will never let them do what if Tucker misses the kick. That just wasn't happening. No. You can what if a lot of things in that game. You can what if, well, from my perspective, what if Ryan Tannehill plays a more consistent game? What if Cyrus Gray's not hurt? What if they call the holding on Espinosa? What if they don't call the thing on Davis? That stupid 15-yard penalty. There's a lot of stuff. But don't tell me, well, what if Justin Tucker just shanked it? Like that wasn't going to happen.
A little bit of a nitpick here on the celebration afterwards.
Yes.
Where Justin Tucker is running up the field, starts to run away from his teammates who are swarming towards him.
He took a tour. Case McCoy was trying to get to him.
Whoever it was who eventually grabbed Tucker and takes him down, hey, can we please not horse collar?
Was it horse collar tackle?
Oh, man, he takes him down. Fortunately, Tucker crumbles pretty quickly because he's a kicker. Otherwise, that could have been a CL injury.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that part. I wasn't really focused on that part of it, Trey, at that moment.
I'm guessing you weren't looking at the field anymore after the kick hit.
Oh, man, that was an incredible night.
What was your reaction in the stands? Were you pretty much just, like, gathering your stuff and leaving at that point?
I'm always one to stay till the very end because that's how my parents raised me. So I'm all about.
But that was the end.
Right. But I'm also about soaking up the moment a little bit.
Okay.
I probably took a picture of the scoreboard. I mean, honestly, what hit me was sadness, not just sadness of losing. I've watched A&M lose to Texas. That I can deal with.
Sadness that you were losing the game.
Sadness that the game was going away. My favorite college football game of my life was gone, and I knew some of the feelings that were about to happen because we've been discussing it on sports talk radio for a year and a half by that point. And I knew it wasn't going to get any better. And I knew that both sides were going to dig their heels in hard and I may never see the game again. And 9 years later, I have not seen the game again. So that was my sadness. I took a picture of the scoreboard. I took a picture of that logo on the Jumbotron one more time. I took a picture of that logo on the field one more time, the Lone Star Showdown logo, which I loved, by the way, the star with the boats. I thought it was great. So that's what I remember. I remember my general sadness, and then I remember the respectful looks I got from a bunch of Longhorn people leaving that stadium, whether they knew who I was or not. It was that look of, we know we just got a Christmas present. We know deep down that these were two pretty blah football teams, and we know that on paper, ours probably wasn't supposed to win the game, but we are taking this to the bank. And I gave them a look back like, you should take this to the bank because it's the last one and you found a way to get it done and our guys didn't play well enough and they deserve to lose the game and you guys deserve to win it. So have a safe trip home. You know, I mean, I had that kind of conversation, if not just that look, with a bunch of people. But the looks on Longhorn fans' faces, even looking at each other, it was like, can you believe we're getting out of here with that win?
It was a weirdly similar feel for me as a Longhorn fan as the final Nebraska game.
Yep.
Their final game in the Big 12.
Good call. Good comparison.
Where you go into their home, although A&M wasn't as highly ranked as Nebraska was at that time. I think Nebraska was maybe a top five team.
They were like six, I think, in the country.
Yeah, somewhere around top five.
Yep.
heavily favored. Longhorn fans, I mean, you knew because of the recent history that you had a chance, but you weren't feeling great about your prospects. And in the end, you got to celebrate a victory. You don't really even totally know how it happened.
Yeah.
But you were still there at the end, victorious on the scoreboard.
So the question, Trey, is how does, and this is obviously the week where, you know, I get sad every year because Texas is playing a different team and A&M's playing a different team.
I really hate what the Thanksgiving game has turned into. And Iowa State is a slightly better opponent.
Yep.
But even the years where a good TCU team was coming into Austin, when, and obviously every other year it was Texas Tech, like Texas sucked most of those years. That game has meant nothing since the A&M rivalry has ended.
Now, the good news for this year for Texas is it is a ranked matchup. And also they've gotten rid of the notion that Texas has to be the home team for Thanksgiving week. They've gotten rid of the notion that Texas or A&M needs to play on Thanksgiving. Thank God. Neither of them do anymore.
They don't play any college games on Thanksgiving anymore, right?
There's a couple, but they're bad. Okay. Yeah, there's a couple kind of mid-level games. Not even the Egg Bowl plays on Thanksgiving anymore.
I wonder if A&M and Texas would play on Thanksgiving if they were to resume the rivalry and get to do so this weekend again, because the NFL seems to have carte blanche on the actual day.
Yeah, once the NFL went to that night game too, you kind of, go ahead and give the day to them. So it is a ranked matchup with Texas and Iowa State, and this is going to be a fascinating game because only COVID-19 could help create this kind of contrast. Now, there's plenty of games where one team has a bye, one team doesn't have a bye, but this one is weird. I mean, like, one team comes off a short week, whip an opponent like you need to and have a lot of rhythm, and then the other team was, you know, chose to take a week off or whatever. The conference gave them the week off with a bye, and then you are told you can't play, and you have to reset things. Tom Herman pointed it out yesterday. They reset on what, Wednesday is when we found out they weren't going to play.
Mm-hmm.
So they go from game prep of Kansas to, all right, full in on Iowa State, which I'm sure they were doing a little Iowa State with what they thought was a short week. And now it's not. So I want to see how the Longhorns come out and play, especially early in this game, Trey. They're not a good starting team. They've been a little clunky at the beginning of games. Mm-hmm. What's it going to look like now that they've had this, 20-day stretch?
It's interesting to look at Iowa State as a football team. They're very similar to what we've seen out of Texas this year. They played a lot of close games. Their senior leader quarterback, although I guess technically Purdy is not a senior just yet, but their veteran quarterback has not lived up to expectations so far this year. Iowa State a little bit better running the football. Obviously having the best running back in the Big 12 will help out with that. But two teams that are fundamentally sound defensively. You couldn't say that about Texas earlier in the season, but I think that we can safely say so now. There may be some question marks in the back end, but these two teams are going to play good brands of defense, and you really don't know what to expect on offense with either. So I expect this game to probably hit the under. It's going to be a low-scoring affair. It's going to be a very physical contest, and it seems like whichever team can maybe find a little bit more in the way of answers through the air might end up winning when it's all said and done.
I completely agree with that. Yeah, I think it is going to be about the quarterback. Whichever quarterback hits the bigger plays probably wins this game, and it's a really interesting contrast of kind of the way they're coming into the game, the way they kind of play, the style a little bit, and what Iowa State likes to do. Everybody thinks of their tight ends. Everybody thinks of Breece Hall. Like, Iowa State knows who their bell cow running back is. They're going to hand it to him a lot. Texas is still trying to figure all that out.
Mm-hmm.
They know who their tight ends are. They use them in all kinds of combinations. They'll use them two and three at a time. Texas is still trying to figure some of that out. The other thing Iowa State's figured out, Trey, that I think could be big trouble for Texas, is they know who their receiver is. And I'm going to talk about eights this week for multiple reasons coming up in Crap Bag. But number eight for Iowa State, Xavier Hutchinson, watch out for that guy. A guy came from Florida, went through JC, went to Blinn, actually.
Hmm.
He's 6'3", 207, and he has caught 16 more passes than Kohler. I know Kohler was banged up,
yep,
but he's caught 16 more, and he's caught 19 more balls than Joshua Moore has, the leading receiver for Texas. Hmm. This dude, they ran him on a ton of long developing drag routes against K-State. If the Texas defense can't get enough pressure on Purdy and they can run long developed routes with number eight, that could be a long morning for Texas.
By the same token, the Texas defensive line can have a big say-so in what happens in this football game. Obviously, limiting the holes that Breece Hall is running through, but getting pressure on Brock Purdy in those obvious passing situations. Iowa State hasn't given up a ton of sacks this year, but that doesn't mean Purdy hasn't been pressured quite a bit. He has saved some sacks with his ability to scramble, to elude pressure, but you want to try and throw him off his game pretty early on once he receives that football to keep some of those longer developing routes from actually getting open.
We will continue to talk Texas Iowa State. Tonight is the first CFP rankings, so how will they run things? Will they leave Clemson in that top four, or are we looking for one of those first ranking shockers like, I don't know, Cincinnati maybe being installed as the number four team? We'll see what happens tonight. Would they dare do that to Dabo and the crew? Also coming up, some NFL cleanup. Rams beat the Bucks last night. Cowboys and Texans going into Thanksgiving Day games, and the Cowboys are going in with heavy, heavy hearts. We got a breaking news story that I wish I didn't have to tell you coming up about the Cowboys. Stay with us. It's The Horn. Come on now. What you got, Sam?
This is I Who Have Nothing by Ray Frazier and the Shades of Madness.
Now that's a great name. Say it again.
Ray Frazier and the Shades of Madness.
The Shades of Madness. That is fantastic. All right, rolling through a Tuesday here. First off, let's remind you, there's another Coors Light Longhorn photo booth going on today. So if you're a Longhorn fan and you could use a $50 gift card to the University Co-op online store, that's a stocking stuffer right there. Here's what you do. Go to the Total Wine and More on Research. That's 10,001 Research if you need the address. Go to the Coors Light display. Get stocked up on Coors Light, too, for the game, and that would help for Thanksgiving. Go hashtag Longhorns Made to Chill when you put it on social media, and you'll be registered for that gift card. So when you're out getting all stocked up for Thanksgiving, grab your Coors Light and get it taken care of there at Total Wine and More. That's on Research Boulevard. All right, before we get into some of the NFL cleanup, this is one of those things that I hope it's some kind of crazy misunderstanding, but it doesn't sound like it is. Earlier today, they announced that the Cowboys had to close the facility, and you're thinking, 2020, it's COVID, somebody tested positive. Not the case. We were told right away it was a non-COVID medical emergency with someone on the Cowboys staff. It's like, okay, and with an employee of the Cowboys. And then just recently, I see a tweet come out from a guy who covers the Cowboys, Richie Witt, blue check and everything. It says, just told by the Cowboys, by a Cowboys employee, that the assistant coach rushed to the hospital this morning has passed away.
Ugh.
Horrific news. I'll let the team/family announce the name when they feel it's appropriate. God, that's awful.
Yeah, feel terrible. Obviously, thoughts with this individual's family and friends.
So when if and when we find out the name, we will let you know. But that is what the Cowboys are dealing with this morning.
Kind of a messed up thing to say, but you wish it was COVID at this point.
Absolutely.
You wish it was something COVID related versus a loss of life.
Not often we've thought that in 2020, but you're right. Yeah. And then we also forget, we've said throughout the season, you forget about stuff like injury. You forget about those things. But then this is just one too, right? Life just keeps going and life keeps going and cancer keeps going. And in this case, who knows if this is a heart attack or some kind of situation. But that is happening in the Cowboys world. Cowboys getting ready for a short week 2 days from now. They're playing Washington, and that has got to be an emotional toll to take on to deal with.
And we've already seen the NFL doesn't really care about whatever your problems are on your roster or within your football team. You're going to play that game on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Good job, NFL.
Yes. Way
to back yourself into a corner on that one.
Yesterday, Ravens say Ingram and Dobbins both have COVID-19. Today, they have another guy on the line with COVID-19. But the NFL apparently has sent word out that they're going to play Steelers-Ravens no matter what. No matter how many positives the Ravens have. Wow. Talk about prioritizing your Thanksgiving money.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a big day. But also, let's remember, Trey, that's the night game. No disrespect to the Lions and Cowboys, because obviously the Cowboys are a draw on Thanksgiving. And the Lions, I'm sure people watch that game. But that NBC Sunday night game is a monster. And when they started putting it on Thursday night, they realized, oh, it can be a monster here too. That's a massive ratings and you know, sponsor hit for NBC.
Is it a bigger ratings boon than the daytime games? Like, I know for a fact that the Lions and then the Cowboys games are always on in the homes that I am celebrating Thanksgiving at. We're hosting Thanksgiving this year.
Right.
Those games will be on our respective televisions, and because I'm a football fan, I'll be watching Ravens-Steelers, but I'm not going to be paying as close attention, potentially, depending on how the game goes, as I am those earlier games, even in a year where neither the Lions or Cowboys are all that good.
You may be right, and I don't know what the full ratings have shown them. They did decide a few years ago that a rival game works well there. And I agree with them because this is rival season in college football.
Yep.
So they've done Steelers-Ravens, which I think they ought to do every year and just lock it in. But they've also done like Saints-Falcons when they were good.
Yeah, that's true.
They've done that.
I remember that one from a couple of years ago. That's a good call.
If both teams are good, we're getting Bears-Packers this week anyway. Bears aren't as good, but they're all right. But when those two teams...
Bears get way too much national TV love.
They do. When they're really good, that could be an interesting matchup. So Cowboys and Texans, if you don't know, they're both on Thanksgiving. It's the Texans who will play Detroit at 11:30, Cowboys and Washington at 3:30. Last night, we rounded out Week 11, a great Week 11, with as many six-win teams as we've ever had in the league at that time. Five winning matchups. There'll be less this week. It ended up with the Rams and the Bucks. Entertaining game, Trey. If you didn't care who won the ball game, in the end it was the Rams. 27-24. The former Buck kicker ends up kicking the game-winning field goal for the Rams and getting to thumb his nose at his old team last night.
Neither team that good at running the football. The Rams better at throwing the ball, of course. Jared Goff ends up with almost 400 yards passing, three touchdowns, but he also throws a couple of picks. I'd say both quarterbacks were actually pretty sloppy in this game, and almost in spite of himself, Jared Goff leads his team to a victory.
Yeah, this is one of those where if you're a fan of one of these teams, and I am a fan of one of these teams, Craig Way is a fan of the other.
It was so funny listening to the two of you bemoan your respective team before today's show.
Like, they're both good, and they both can be very good, but the consistency issue hits both of them in a bit of a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the rushing. 37 yards for the Rams, 42 yards for the Bucks. I know it's 2020, and I know I'm an old man football fan. It's got to be better than that. Goff attempted 51 passes, and Brady attempted 48. Again, I know I'm an old man football fan. That's not how you win in this league.
You don't want Jared Goff throwing the football that many times, and probably Tom Brady at this point in his career, you don't want him throwing it that much either.
You don't. Not in that style of game. If you're hitting every play, it's one thing. When you're throwing those four interceptions were unforgivable for both of them. Each threw two, and both were pathetic.
I'd missed that JPP interception the first time. I'm glad you asked me to check it out before today's show. What the hell was Goff doing right there?
How do you throw?
Oh, it was 2 yards behind the running back.
It was terrible. A defensive end had to bend over to catch the ball
and
picked it off. By the way, nice job by JPP. We all know he's missing part of the hand there. He also knocked the ball away with that part, the hand later.
You know, you don't need to mention the fact that he's missing part of that hand every time we talk about a JPP play.
No, when he actually knocks the ball away with the hook.
It's not a hook. He still has a couple of fingers on that hand.
Dude, they're the Buccaneers. He's embraced the nickname Captain Hook. I can call him Captain Hook. He's one of my guys. We're good. We're good. I froze it and showed my wife. I'm like, look, that's the hand. You can see like the missing finger and you can see part of the thumb. And
yeah.
They made a special Under Armour glove for him and everything.
Did they?
Yeah.
Well, they just like staple the empty finger slots shut?
No. Now who's being mean?
I'm just asking about this specially made glove.
They just shorten things. They just shorten the material.
Okay.
So I don't think either one of those teams, neither one of those teams feels like a Super Bowl team. They don't even feel like a championship game team. So I wonder what happens. The Bucks get sluggish when it goes bad, and the Rams get sloppy when it goes bad. Craig Way was yelling about it going out of here. It would drive me nuts as a Rams fan watching that stinking play clock go to 3, 2, 1. Remember the year, was it with Colt? It would have been the Colt time or Case. One of the McCoys, I feel like Longhorn fans spent a lot of time complaining about, why is that clock running down all the way to the end?
I'm going
to
go out on a limb and say Case McCoy.
They know when the snap is coming when you do that. But with the Rams, they'll let it go too far. They flirt with the penalty over and over again. They got hit with it a couple times last night. So all of that is a bit of a question mark. What's not, Trey, is how good Kupp and Woods are when you utilize them correctly.
Mm-hmm.
They had 23 catches between them, a touchdown for Woods. Kupp ran some incredible routes last night. Those two guys locked in, they're tough to deal with, man. Cooper Kupp showed it last night. He faked one of those bucks out of his shoes, literally. He had a guy fall down.
Talking about the spin move?
That little spin move on that dig route or whatever. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
He screwed that guy into the ground with the route. So we'll see what happens with those two teams. I just don't know if I would absolutely trust either one of them right now. Fun to watch, though. I mean, highly entertaining. Throw those teams out there anytime you want, but I'm not quite sure if they're any better than, you know, than that level. They're good to kind of good, like Craig said when he walked out of here. That's a both of those feel like one-win playoff teams, but I don't know if you get two wins.
Yeah.
Out of teams that they're going to play that way.
Some of the other more compelling matchups from this weekend, Tennessee takes down Baltimore in overtime. You get that impressive Derrick Henry run to seal the victory at the end. Any thoughts on that one?
It was kind of the bar fight that I thought it would be. And the Ravens just are showing their digression, their sluggishness. They're not quite what they need to be. They can't run the ball absolutely when they want to. And Tennessee, they ain't pretty. And you're not calling your friends to say, oh, my God, the Titans are on. But they'll get it done. And in the end, Derrick Henry's a beast. And as long as they can – if they can maintain, like, health on the offensive line and Tannehill's not throwing major screw-ups, you know, he stayed pretty consistent.
He was okay dangerous in this game. I know he had the one interception, but I thought he looked pretty good. He had a couple of touchdown passes. They were utilizing his legs at the right times, and they just grinded it out with Henry. His stats ended up looking good. They weren't great until that final touchdown run, though.
Yeah.
He had gotten over 100 yards, first running back to crack 1,000 yards on the season, but they were really having to ride him, and eventually that Ravens defense wore down enough to where he was able to get that game-winning touchdown run.
What'd you think of Dez Bryant in the purple?
It looks so weird. He had one really nice catch that I recall where he caught the ball. I think he shrugged off a tackle and ended up taking it up the right side for a first down. That looked good. I was happy to see him get back to that point to where he could contribute like that. Now, he's not going to ever be a number one wide receiver again, but he could be a nice secondary option for them going forward. Unfortunately for the Ravens, who are you going to throw the football to with any sort of regularity other than maybe Mark Andrews?
Right.
Lamar Jackson has not been great as a passer this year. He had guys dropping the ball left and right on him on Sunday.
Yeah, both
Marquise
issues.
Brown,
yeah.
After he bitched about not getting the football enough, he had a couple of drops. Snead had a couple of drops. Andrews even had a drop downfield. Now, it was a tough catch for him, but it was still a very catchable football. As much as Lamar has struggled, he needs his receivers to do a better job of stepping up.
He's got the same thing that we saw with Brady and the Bucks a little bit last night. Sometimes the throws were bad, and then there were drops. Like Leonard Fournette's dropping balls all over the place for the Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one last night where it's like I couldn't decide what was worse. His hands or the ball or the throw.
Yeah.
In the end, I thought, you know what? Tom's got to give you a better pass than that.
Mm-hmm.
He can't ask you to go catch that ball. And that's what we're seeing with the Ravens, too. I said it all the way back in the summer. Can Lamar Jackson hit NFL windows when he needs to hit an NFL window? Because let me tell you what. When Mahomes and Russell and Rodgers are asked to hit NFL windows, they hit them. Just about every time.
He was hitting them last year, but I think a lot of that was because teams were so geared up to stop the rushing attack. If they run any sort of play action, he has a little bit more of a crease that he is able to hit with those throws. And now those don't seem to exist quite as much on top of him being less accurate.
Speaking of Tennessee, they're a part of one of the three winning matchups this week. Baltimore-Pittsburgh is, of course, one on Thanksgiving night. Tennessee-Indy, speaking of bar fights, 7-3 at 7-3, not for the faint at heart. And then we'll see the late game on 325. If the Bucks are going to play like last night, second and third quarter, Kansas City is going to step on them. It's Kansas City at Tampa Bay. And good news for Tom Brady, Trey, it's not prime time. So maybe they can play actual football. They look pretty good in those other time slots.
Right.
They better find it here because Kansas City will absolutely lap them if they're going to play that way.
And I think that starts with the Bucs front 4-6 getting pressure on Pat Mahomes. I think Kansas City is going to end up running the football a little bit more in this game, mm-hmm. just so that Tampa isn't able to pin their ears back and get after Pat Mahomes. But they've got to try and find a way to get pressure on him on those passing downs.
All right, lots of stuff coming today. Our normal Tuesday conversations, we're just going to stagger them a little bit. We're going to line them right up for you. Jeff Ward of Statesman News Network coming up at 1, and then Ari Temkin, because of scheduling, needs to go at 1:30. Got to talk to him after a Cowboys win from the Cowboys Radio Network, also Big 12 Radio on Sirius XM. He follows Kansas, so we'll ask about Kansas hoops, Texas hoops, and the Big 12 getting started this week. We've got our man Sam Pika in here. We going Am I the A-Hole at 1:45?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeed. That's coming up at 1:45. But up next, let's get nerdy. I've been telling you, told you yesterday, I think I've crunched the numbers, and Texas needs to beat Iowa State by 8+. I'll get into a little more of why that is. I'm going to read the tie-breaking procedures to Trey, and he's going to see if my math is wrong or if I'm thinking about this in a weird way. That's coming up in a crap bag on the Horn. Hope you're having a good Tuesday. Special lineup tonight because you got the short week headed into Thanksgiving. It is a special Under the Lights tonight at 7, right after the Triple Option. And then 8 o'clock, it is the Longhorn Blitz podcast. Jeff Howe, when he jumped in with Craig today, threw out a great stat, and they'll get into a lot of others I know. Texas and Iowa State, Tom Herman versus Matt Campbell. The winner has never scored more than 24. It's an interesting little note.
Okay.
You said you thought the under might be the way to go in this game. Sounds like the numbers would agree with you. Hear more numbers, more ideas, more crunching of stats with those guys. It's a fantastic show with Jeff and Rod and Matt. Longhorn Blitz at 8, Under the Lights for all you high school football fans at 7 o'clock tonight. All right. Also want to give you a quick reminder, Thanksgiving coming up. If you need some ideas, I was at Z Tejas the other day. Both locations have a Thanksgiving special coming up tomorrow. If you want to go in, get it taken care of early on a Wednesday. They have a Wednesday special. Both locations open 11 to 8, $25 a person. I had the chorizo pork tenderloin. What I'm learning at Z Tejas is if they put the word chorizo on something,
yeah,
I order it and it's awesome.
Okay.
Every time.
I feel like that's a general good rule of thumb, but especially at Z-Tejas.
The vegetables have been great too, Trey. You know I've been trying to lose and maintain the weight and soda and all that, so I'll try to stay away from mashed potatoes and mm-hmm. go towards the vegetables. Their vegetables have been just lovely. The vegetables and peppers and the way they season them up, oh, they've been good.
Any particular vegetables?
It's generally been like a, it's been like, I think there's been like onion, pepper, asparagus.
Mm.
And some kind of, what has been, there's something else mixed in there. I can't remember if it's a fruit or something that's been in there. Maybe like a little pineapple has been working in there.
Okay.
Oh, it's been tasty. Really good. ZTejas.com. Find out about the Thanksgiving specials for tomorrow as we get towards Thanksgiving on Thursday. And remember, Friday morning, 11 o'clock kick. So 7 o'clock is the pregame. Longhorn Game Day brought to you by Coors Light will fire up at 7 a.m. on Black Friday as the Longhorns are going to be trying to handle Iowa State. We'll see if they wear black like they did last week. Iowa State changes uniforms fairly often, so we'll see what they bring to town. Maybe they go all whites because they're on the road this
time.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to have the option unless Texas chooses to go icy whites again at home.
Yeah, they won't go black. Well, they could go black helmet if they wanted to, but I guess that would...
They could. I don't know if I've ever seen that one before,
I'm
though.
Not sure if I've ever seen that combo, but we'll see what they decide to show up with on Friday. All right, let's get into this crap bag math here.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. So over the weekend, I went back over these tie-breaking scenarios, and I think I have come to this conclusion. I know I've come to the conclusion. I think I'm right. I just want to make sure I'm right on this, that Texas needs to beat Iowa State by 8+. That would be if it's a three-way tiebreaker with Texas, Iowa State, and Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State has lost an additional game. They would have to lose another one to create that tiebreaker. Somebody texted us yesterday, wait a minute, a four-way tiebreaker, Texas should be fine. Yes, you're right about that. And if you want to see read through all of my sick math and logic, go to hornfm.com. It's right there on the news feed. It's also on our show page. I went through the math a little bit. But what I want to do now is read through these tiebreakers, Trey, and make sure I'm not going crazy. So I'm on big12sports.com, and I link this on hornfm.com so everybody can go read it if they want to. So we get to this point, and obviously they lay things out like, you know, if you're tied, the winner of the regular season game prevails, and we know that, right? This is if three or more teams are tied. Steps 1 through 4 will be followed until a determination is made. If only two teams remain tied after any step, the winner of the regular season game gets it. We all know that. That's kind of a duh. So here's number one. The conference records of the three or more teams will be compared against each other in a mini round-robin format.
For head-to-head.
Head-to-head stuff, right? In that case, Texas would have beaten Iowa State. Iowa State beat OU. OU beat Texas. You don't figure anything out that way. Now we go to number two. This is the one that people have been interpreting differently. The conference records of the three or more teams will be compared against the remaining teams in the conference standings from top to bottom.
Hmm. But isn't that going to be the same?
Yes.
If the first two things are the same, isn't the...
To me, this is kind of a redundancy.
Right.
Like, it's a little bit of a, well, duh.
The Department of Redundancy Department.
Some people interpreted that to say, you're going to look at the three teams and then go down the standings and say, well, did you beat that team? Did you beat that team? Did you beat that team? But I don't think that's how that works, because that would be a weird, unfair way to do it. Like, the argument would be that because Oklahoma lost to K-State, but if Texas and Iowa State both beat them.
But if the fourth place team here is Oklahoma State, then it would be OU and Texas, because Iowa State lost to Oklahoma State.
Correct. Yes. That's where you'd be talking about. Yeah, that's the within the group of teams, right?
We should get that clarified, because there is a big difference in those two things, because if the teams all have a 1-1 record against the other, they're obviously going to have the same record against the rest of the conference.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't want to, like, I can't imagine that if Oklahoma lost to, we know they lost to Kansas State, or let's take the TCU example for Texas. If TCU, they did beat Texas, but if they finish with a worse conference record, you can't go picking through it and say, well, you know, you lost to TCU. How'd you all do against TCU? Because then you're being unfair. Because games happen at home and road, different situations and weather. So I don't think that's what they're saying there. Mm. Then a little addendum is, when comparing against the remaining teams in the conference standings, any two-way ties will be broken by head-to-head, competition before the comparison begins. Yeah, exactly. In other words, if Oklahoma and Kansas State had end up with the same conference record, obviously you'd use their head-to-head, right, before you go into a comparison. Sure. Then B, if more than a two-way tie exists among the remaining teams, the record against the collective tied teams as a group will be used. Okay? That's the part of it that we get into.
Yeah.
Three teams, it's the same record, right?
Yes.
You each beat the other in the three-way tie. Again, the four-way tie is what you just said, where Texas and OU would be 2-1, and Iowa State and Oklahoma State would be 1-2.
Right.
I lay all this out on hornfm.com if you want to see the sickness. Then we get to part three. Scoring differential among the tied teams. The team or teams with the lowest difference between points scored and points allowed versus the tied teams is eliminated from consideration. So again, versus the tied teams. It's only among those teams, right? So here's the logic. If it's Oklahoma, Iowa State, Texas, Oklahoma's done with those two games. They beat Texas by 8. They lost to Iowa State by 7. Plus 8 minus 7 is plus 1. Iowa State is sitting at plus 7 because they beat OU. Texas is sitting at minus 8 because they lost to OU. That's where I get my plus 8. If Texas wins the game by 7, that would give Texas a minus 1, and it would give Iowa State 0. That 0 would win in the discussion. Texas gets thrown out. Winning by 8 or more is where the 8 would get Texas to a 0 and Iowa State to a minus 1. Anything above that, it's more positive for Texas.
It makes sense for me, Chad. One thing that we need clarification on now is whether they're going to go down the line of records against other foes in the conference.
Okay, so
that's the only other thing that I have a question about now.
I got the conference standings pulled up. If you got to the end and they were all three, if they had two losses, right? What you're saying there is you'd start at the top and you'd say, you'd look at everybody's record against Iowa State, right?
Well, you're not going to take the top. So Oklahoma State has to lose one more game.
Correct.
For this to really matter.
Yep.
So at that point,
they have three losses.
Oklahoma, Texas, Iowa State are all tied.
Yep.
In the standings. So you take those three teams out of it.
Okay.
You take the fourth team in the conference, which I believe would be Oklahoma State.
Correct.
And at that point, you say, which of these teams beat Oklahoma State and did any lose? And the answer is yes. Texas and Oklahoma won that game. Iowa State lost it, so Texas and Oklahoma are going to the Big 12 championship game. I don't know if that's how it's settled, though.
Yeah.
Because the language is kind of vague.
Because their language doesn't say head-to-head. Their language says the conference records of the three or more teams will be compared against the remaining teams in the conference standings. If you're going conference record to conference record, all their records will be better than all the other teams. So I don't know if that's just redundant and duh, and Bob Bowlesby was in charge of putting this together on the website, or
sounds like
if they're really going into that level of detail. They probably should clarify that before, you know, people like me start adding and subtracting and all that. So if I'm right, it's 8+ needed for Texas against Iowa State. If it's simpler than that, please read through all this and let me know what I am missing, because I feel like I might be missing something. All right, up next, it's Jeff Ward of Statesman News Network. Then we go right to Ari Temkin and then Sam Pika with Where Are We At in Society and Am I the A-Hole? Yeah, that's a 1 o'clock hour you can't miss on the horn.